Hello, and welcome to the Tech Startup Show. In this episode, I speak to Kunal Kushwar, developer advocate at Sivo, an awesome YouTuber, founder, TEDx speaker, and hackathon coach. He's building a YouTube channel, the Community Classroom Vancouver World organizations, and so much more. In this episode, we talk about growing on YouTube, developer advocacy, and online learning. So let's jump straight in. So firstly, Kunal, thank you so much for your time today. It's such an honor to have you on the Tech Startup Show. Do you want to just give us a bit of an introduction to yourself?
Yeah, hey everyone. Thanks for, first of all, Charles, thanks for having me. Really appreciate you, giving the time as well. And I'm Kunal. I work as a developer advocate at Sivo, and I'm a student from India. I graduate this year around July 2022. And I love cloud native. I love communities. I started my own YouTube channel in August last year. We have a community, Cube World, and Community Classroom. We conduct events and podcasts and meetups and all these things. I'm a CNCF ambassador. I'm an MLH coach, and I'm also been a TEDx speaker. Yeah, happy to be on the show and talk more about stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like you're involved in a lot of things, and I'd just like to talk about your YouTube journey first. So what really got you started with YouTube?
So my channel is mostly focused around tutorials, and I believe this thing started way before I had a YouTube channel. So when I was in my freshman year, I used to volunteer at local programming boot camps, like teach kids programming and stuff. And that's when I realized that I really like teaching. I really like to explain complex things into simpler format, like graph theory and all these things. And then I got into DevOps and Kubernetes, which itself is really complex. But yeah, the feedback I got from the community about the way I teach and the tutorials I make, it was pretty positive and motivating. So I sort of like then started, just teaching folks online, because we all hit the pandemic and most folks were learning online. So it was a great opportunity, not just for me. We saw so many folks starting their own online communities and online stuff because of the pandemic. So I was one of them, and I started a few organizations and started my YouTube channel, and it was pretty good. I got around 100,000 subscribers in 3 months or something. I'm close to 200,000 now, so that is good. But yeah, on my channel, you can mostly find technical content, tutorials, and podcasts.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's amazing how fast you've grown. How has your journey on YouTube been? I mean, how have you grown this fast?
It's like before YouTube as well, I was actively involved in the open source community. And I believe I had a few followers around LinkedIn and stuff, but still nothing compared to what I have right now. The reason for the growth, it's just the pattern that I have recognized is if you create good content, people will follow you. So there are so many great folks who are YouTubers who break down complex things into smaller problems. Like Free Code Camp is there. Tech with Nana is there, who breaks down complex DevOps problems into smaller ones. And all of their channels sort of shot up. The only common thing I saw was that they were really good at what they do. That's sort of the case with me, is what I have heard from other people. Don't want to say more about myself from my own words, but I enjoy teaching and people like it, and they resonate with it. They are happy with the content I'm providing and they're satisfied, and they, most important part is they see results. And this is also something I emphasize on quite a lot, that no matter how many tutorials you watch in development or whatever, if you're not practicing yourself, then that's not going to help out much. But I try to break down smaller problems, bigger problems into smaller problems, even into smaller problems. I try to explain concepts in such a way that minimum amount of doubts are coming into students' minds, because I'm a student and I recently learned these things a few years ago. So I know where folks get stuck. But yeah, I think that's one of the reasons, not just me, but if you create good content and if it's benefiting people. And so for example, I have the data structures course, and people every day they give me messages I was able to clear this interview this Google interview, this Fang interview or non-Fang interview or whatever. So then they share about it on socials and other people see, oh, this person is learning so much. They're scoring good in their exams and stuff. Now, a few professors are also recommending my courses in universities, which was unreal. But I think if you make good content, be it YouTube or other platforms, people will come, they will watch. Yeah, that's what it boils down to. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that teaching on YouTube has allowed you to learn better and understand the concepts you're learning in college better?
Most definitely. There's a Richard Feynman technique. When you teach someone something, your knowledge also gets enhanced. So most definitely, yeah, it has helped me. And whenever I create a new tutorial, I have to do my research as well about the topic and make sure I'm not missing out on anything, because YouTube does not allow you to edit videos. So once it's there, you can't edit it. So I have to make sure like I'm adding everything, making it clear and concise, not missing out any subtopics. And that itself is a great way for me to also enhance my knowledge and learn new things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what have you been your best moments and your worst moments of your YouTube journey?
The best moment is obviously the support from the community. The worst moment is also the expectations from the community, because when the community grows quite a lot and I do a lot of things at once, college is there, work is there, communities are there, events and all these things. So obviously I'm not getting time to, let's say, post videos consistently. And the community is then like, your viewers will be like, please post more videos. We need more tutorials. But you are like, I need time for that. So that's sort of like one of the downsides. It's sort of like a good downside. Like people are, they're really like, they want to see your content, but I just need more time. Yeah.
I mean, you seem to be posting so consistently on YouTube, on all your social media, and creating so much content. How are you so consistent with all your content creation?
I have a plan. So when I started the DSA bootcamp, I was spending like every day I was creating like one video and stuff, but then I realized that this is getting too much, burning out, should probably slow down. And right now I'm more focused around setting up a professional community in cloud native, which is Cube World, and I'm heavily focusing on that. So all the content and events and initiatives, everything is happening around cloud native. Regarding consistency, it's just that avoid burnout and try to set like goals. I have a few goals, like I want to make this tutorial by the end of the week and that tutorial by the end of the month, and this is the event I want to do around this particular tool or whatever. So I think planning is key.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that when you, to try and avoid burnout, you sort of slow down. What are your other tips for avoiding burnout?
Yeah, learn how to say no. When your channel grows, you'll get a lot of collaboration requests. Only take collaboration requests if you like actually resonate, like if you want to do it and if you have the time to do it. Don't make like any false promises or whatever. I think that's also one of the most important skills, learn how to say no. And the second thing would be prioritizing your tasks. I think like that's also crucial. You don't have to post a video every day. Once a week is also fine.
Mm-hmm. And how do you manage your time working on so many different projects? You know, your developer advocacy, your YouTube channel, your hackathon, coaching. How do you juggle all of that and manage your time?
Yeah, that is a question I get quite a lot. And there's a what is it called? Eisenhower matrix. So basically, important, not important, urgent, not urgent. Something that is important and urgent, I'll do it right now. Something that is not important, not urgent, I'll just not do it. So basically, I prioritize my tasks around that. Now that I'm involved in so many things, I think from the outside, it may look like Kunal is doing so many things, but in reality, it's like all of these are in the same domain, cloud native. So it's not like I'm doing so many different things at once. I'm doing many things, but they all align in the same goal, which helps quite a lot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you've really tried to align everything around that one core focus of yours, cloud native. And how have you done that?
So the work I do, I'm a developer advocate at Sivo to work with so many cloud native tools and stuff. The communities I'm running, I'm focusing around cloud native. The content I'm creating is also around cloud native. The events I do are around cloud native. Obviously, there's a little bit of like some other content I often publish, like podcasts, for example, are all about cloud native and open source. The folks I interact with in all these domains, they're also like in the similar community. So I think that has helped quite a lot. It's not like I'm doing some initiatives in blockchain and some initiatives in web dev and some initiatives in machine learning. Obviously, I'm doing individual courses around that, but overall, my focus has been around cloud native for a while now because I'm good at that.
Yeah, and for those of us who don't know much about cloud native, what exactly is it?
Yeah, so when we talk about like cloud native, students often, you know, they are aware of the term like cloud computing. Cloud computing simply like using someone's hardware or like servers and databases and stuff and working with it. Cloud native is basically like it's a concept around building applications that can take advantage of like the modern infrastructure. Like they are scalable, they can run on like hybrid clouds. You may have heard about like there's AWS, and I work at Sivo, for example, GCP, so many other platforms are there. So when it comes to like cloud native applications, there are a few, some benefits associated with it. You may have heard about like Kubernetes. So in Kubernetes, basically you have, it provides us with a container orchestration, for example. And when we talk about the benefits, then you can have like the independence. So basically you can migrate from one cloud to like another cloud. There's some standards that are set accordingly. In cloud native, you can also, you know, heavily rely upon like automation and stuff as well. And obviously high availability. So like no downtime, zero downtime and stuff. So that's basically about it. And there's various ways that folks do it, like the development process, like there's when it comes into picture, like DevOps is something that folks have been following, and how applications are deployed. Then you may have encountered the word microservices, for example. And when we talk about deploying applications, you may have heard about like, so when we first started out, there were like physical racks of servers, and then came into picture like virtual machines. Now we are doing containers, and so that's basically about it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you were studying computer science, is that right?
Yeah.
So what really got you into cloud native?
When I was in my freshman year, I was looking to contribute to some open source projects, and I found this Kubernetes Java client. And you know, Kubernetes is a tool that provides, one of the functionalities provides this container orchestration, as I mentioned previously. Automates a lot of tasks for us, but I did not know anything like about it as such. And I just looked at the project. I looked some beginner-friendly issues and started contributing to it. And that's when I was introduced to this community. And it's not like I only do like cloud native stuff. I have had experiences with like machine learning and web development. But I think I had to pick a lane. So I went with DevOps because it's pretty interesting and new in tools to discover every you know, regularly. And it has been fun. Like when I started with open source, it was with Kubernetes, and then I sort of like just built on top of that.
Mm-hmm. And how do you stay so focused on just cloud native? Because I mean, personally, something I've been struggling with is, you know, I focus on one thing, web development, for example, and then I hear people talking about blockchain, and all of a sudden I'm like building a Solana app or whatever. So
I'm like that. I'm like that as well. It's know everything about something about everything. So I know I've worked with a bunch of things, but I believe like now that I had to pick a lane, it has been DevOps for me. It does not mean like I haven't also dwelled in like various technologies. I work with like web dev and ML and even mobile development. And I did a little bit of AR, VR as well. Not so much, but that's what I focus on. Like try out various things and see where your passion lies. There's no harm in trying out different things. It only enhances your skill set. But yeah, be focused around what you want to do. Especially for students, you should not worry about it that much. Like, explore, and when it's time to get like a role or whatever, then you'll find yourself in a place like, okay, I want to dive deep into this one now or that one now. So I think if you're a student, don't worry about it. Just explore, see what you like, build things, and see the trends. Yeah.
And as a student, how do you manage your time studying and building projects and, you know, creating on YouTube? How do you prioritize different things?
With college, that is something that I would like to mention, which is with college, it's a little bit different because I don't spend much time in college because I'm in my final year. So final year is pretty chill. Not many responsibilities from the college's side. So I think that gives me ample amount of time to do other things that I mentioned. But yeah, college does not take much of my time. Only during the finals and exams and stuff, but overall it is pretty chill. That helps.
Yeah. And I heard that you're also working on another project, Community Classroom and Cuba World, where your mission is to make education free for all. Is that right? Could you tell us a bit more about some other projects you're working on?
I believe education is already like free. There's free code camp that has all these amazing tutorials. We often say that you can learn anything online for free. So it's not like I'm making something new around it. It's just that I'm providing a platform, and there are few courses that do require paid boot camps and stuff. For example, data structures and machine learning. Rest, I assured, like web development, for example, if you want to learn, there's free code camp. There's so many tutorials around JavaScript and web dev on YouTube itself that you can find. So I believe like I want to create this centralized platform in which whatever you want to learn, you can just click on it. It'll list all the resources and roadmap and communities to get involved in and so many things. That's the idea with Community Classroom. We did so many events recently. We did a hackathon. With Cube World, it's more of a professional community in cloud native, not student focused. Obviously, students can get involved. If I as a student can start professional communities, then you as a student can join the such communities. So yeah, that's more of a professional community where it's focused only around like cloud native and news is in cloud native. And it started like last week, to be frank. I'm still working on the website, but we already gained some traction on like Twitter, which is good. The newsletter is setting up, it should be out this month. So yeah, that's more of a professional community focused around cloud native.
Mm-hmm. And what are your future goals with those projects?
With Community Classroom, yeah, as I mentioned, a platform where you can learn anything for free, or it can point you to the right direction, to the right folks, to the right communities to get involved in. With Cube World, it's more like I want to set a community of, a professional community of folks who are, let's say, professional in cloud native, who are new to cloud native, who want to learn more. And the components of it are just events, in-person events and online events. A newsletter that is going to basically compile the resources and stuff, and blogs that I'm going to be writing, content that I'm going to be creating around it, podcasts and collaborations that I'm going to be doing with other people. It's nothing like new. So many organizations have their own like newsletters, they run their own events. This is my take on it. And I also want to set up, for example, scholarships for people to attend some of the biggest cloud native events like KubeCon. One more thing I want to do is I want to run some hiring initiatives as well. So connect companies with potential employees. That's it.
Yeah. And circling back a bit to content creation, how do you get your ideas for what content to create?
Yeah, so the contents I create are around a topic. So when I'm creating content around data structures algorithms, I list down all the essentials for that. From where do we get started? Then all the popular data structures, all the popular concepts from it. One of the reasons I believe people admire the work I do on YouTube is because I do a lot of research before creating content. So it shows, like when you watch the videos, it shows that this person has spent hours in doing research. And that is something I heavily focus on, because if I just pick a question and solve that question, that is already available on YouTube. If I just pick a topic and explain that, it's already available on YouTube. Why would anyone want to watch me? So I make sure that I'm doing heavy research and not missing out on any subtopic or whatever, and it's all like in order. So with the DevOps Bootcamp as well, I'm categorizing it by like monitoring tools and CI/CD. I just made a video on Argo CD, for example. And one of the things also that I focus on is hands-on, like having some action items. So it's not like you're just watching the video and you're done with it. No, there's some action item associated with it so that you can get to test out your skills and stuff. Yeah. It's like people don't, there was a little, nice little quote I heard. People don't buy what you do, they buy how you do it. So even though there's a lot of content available already online, like on data structures algorithms, still, like, I believe my course is pretty good, even though because it's presented in a different way.
And what advice would you have for people who want to get started with content creation, and in particular YouTube?
Just get started with it. Don't worry much about that. The content is only for the community. It's also for you. It's also helping you grow your personal brand, your social profile, for example. So it's helping the community, but it will help you as well. If you worry about whether it's helping the community or that much or not, and this person has already Kunal has already created a course on Kubernetes, I should not do it. That should not be the mindset, right? Maybe you can share something I missed out on, right? Maybe you can explain it in a different way, same concepts, and people may prefer that much better than what I have already done or other folks may have done. So it's like, yeah, content is, it's fine. You can do it and just get started, find your niche and see what you want to create content about, and cross promote it. Basically, if you create a video, then share about it on socials, on other platforms. Once you created a few videos, you'll know what your audience is, what they require. Okay. So take feedback from them, how you can improve, then implement that in your videos. I think that's the way to get started. But the best way to get started is just to get started. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how did you become a hackathon coach? Because you coach MLH, is that right?
Yeah.
You work for MLH and coach some of them.
I was a part of the very first MLH fellowship batch. Fellowship is an internship alternative. So there I contributed to Facebook's Jest project, just fun. And then I was like involved in their hiring team, and I was a community manager for over a year. And we've sort of like talked about coaching and stuff. So coaches are basically MLH event representatives at hackathons. MLH empowers around 135,000 hackers around the world every year. And there's so many events happening in person and online. So yeah, coaches are basically there to make sure everything goes nice. So yeah, I got to be an MLH coach because I was already involved as a part of the MLH fellowship team. So yeah, if you're looking for an internship alternative or stuff, check out MLH fellowship. Great way to get involved in open source.
Mm-hmm. And what is the coolest hackathon project that you've built and the coolest one you've seen?
The coolest one that I saw was a hardware hack. It was like you could control something with like the motions and stuff. I think that was aerial motions. I think that was pretty cool because I don't know anything about hardware. So for me, that was pretty cool. My own hackathon best experience, I think it would be the very first time like MLH came to Asia Pacific region. I was staffing there on behalf of Microsoft, and I think that was like my best experience because that was my first experience with MLH hackathons and also my last in-person hackathon, because after that I think COVID happened. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what does it mean to be a developer advocate?
Yeah, developer advocate is, you know, the developer's best friend. So basically, there are two strains to it. One is the internal developer advocacy. One is the outward developer advocacy. So for example, in internal, well, you have to communicate about the tools and feedback and ideas within the internal team of the community. Outward developer advocacy is more towards like the communicating with the outside world, the community. So it's sort of like the face of the company, or like sharing about the products, helping people on board, creating documentation, contributing to open source, helping out at events. It's more like a merger between a core tech role and like the community focused role, right? So it's sort of like that person who is grabbing these two strings. My role as well, for example, right now is like also talking to potential customers, onboarding new clients and new open source communities and projects. In CloudNative, there are so many open source projects, and in the, for example, like the Sivo marketplace, we collaborate with them regularly, try to see what all new folks we can onboard, and it's open source and it's CloudNative.
Mm-hmm. I mean, thank you so much for your time today, Kunal. Yeah. Final question, where can people connect with you or support you?
Just Twitter is fine. Mostly active on Twitter now. And my YouTube is fine. Yeah, that's it. I'm not much active on LinkedIn. So it may take a little while to reply. But one more thing about asking questions is, if it's a general question, then ask questions in public, because more people will see it and more people will be able to help you out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, asking a question on Twitter or Discord or whatever can not only help you because you'll get your answer, but it can help others. So that's a really great way of asking questions. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Kunal, for your time. It's been so amazing to have you and learn so much about developer advocacy and all sorts of different things.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.